Thank you, Andrew, and good morning, everyone. I hope there's a clicker over here. There we go. I'd like to start just by drawing your attention to the forward-looking statements. For more information on this, please refer to our 10K and 10Qs. So this morning's discussion, three areas. Firstly, as Andrew said, we recently gave an early outlook that we expect to be back in our long-term guidance for 2016 on net sales and operating profits. So I want to give you a sense of why we're confident we're going to achieve that, and not just for 2016, but beyond 2016. Secondly, Chris Hood's here to give you an update on Europe and the Pringles business globally. Chris joined the company with the Pringles acquisition, which has been an outstanding success for the company. And then Ron will give you an update on the financials, in particular some of the outstanding productivity programs the company is driving that's giving us unprecedented earnings visibility going forward. Let me give you a sense, though, on why we're confident on 2016. It starts with the transformation of the company. And the company has transformed, and that transformation is still ongoing. Secondly, we have an outstanding management team, easily the best management team at Kellogg in my 20 years at the company. We're seeing improving top-line trends come through the results of the company. They're somewhat masked in 2015. I think you said it even more clearly in 2016. And we have outstanding earnings visibility driven by very, very good productivity programs that, again, Ron will give you more details on. First, in terms of the transformation of the company, you go back to around 2000, about a $6 billion business, 70% of our sales in breakfast, really cereal, 20% of our sales we called portable foods, or portable cereal, Nutri-Grain bars, Rice Krispie treats, those sorts of things. Today, around a $14, $15 billion business, depending on foreign exchange, 45% in cereal slash breakfast, 45% in snacks. So today we're the world's largest cereal company, but also the world's second largest savory snack company and world's second largest cookie cracker company as well, the remaining 10% being in frozen foods. So the company has transformed from really a focus solely on cereal to being a global cereal and global snacks player. And this transformation is continuing. We remain very interested in acquisitions in the area of snacks, emerging markets, and natural organic foods in markets like the US and other developed countries around the world. We also have an outstanding leadership team at the company. The people with the red around their photos here are new to the company over the last 3 to 4 years. We have an outstanding combination of very strong internal talent and exceptional external leaders that we've brought into the company, which I think brings together the combination even more powerful than just one in isolation. So great external people, very, very strong internal people. And we're seeing improving top-line trends across our company. So strong growth in Latin America, strong growth in Asia Pacific, stable top line in Europe with excellent margin expansion. North America has been the business that we have more work to do, and we've made some recent management changes in North America with a new head of snacks, Dini Elsner, and a new head of morning foods, Craig Boehner, both coming in from the outside the company. So why do we have confidence in the improving top line trends? In part, look at the U.S. cereal business. U.S. cereal has been a tough category for us the last couple of years. We're definitely seeing that business improve its performance. Two key reasons. Firstly, Special K, moving from a diet positioning to a wellness positioning, adding things like more red berries to Special K red berries, innovation around Special K gluten-free, Special K protein. All of these are helping that business significantly improve its performance. We're investing back in the food and businesses like Kashi. Great innovation coming out this year, and we expect that business to be back in growth in 2016 after a very difficult last couple of years. So in some respects, lost distribution in Kashi is masking stronger underlying performance within that business. The good news on cereal, though, in total, is we are seeing better trends come through in our cereal business. We don't need to grow our cereal business in the U.S. in order to meet our long-term algorithm, but obviously the better improvement from the last few years is significantly helping the company get there. And as you think about cereal and you go outside markets like the U.S., it is absolutely a growth category. So we're seeing mid-single-digit volume growth across Latin America. Obviously, that translates to double-digit local currency growth. We're seeing double-digit volume growth across Asia, with strong growth in markets like India, but also markets like Japan, Korea, and sub-Saharan Africa. So cereal is a strong growth category outside some of these large, developed cereal businesses. Turning to snacks, we have a very strong snacks business here in the U.S., Cheez-It has grown 19 consecutive years. It's the biggest brand in the cracker category, gained a share point in Q2. and it's really leaning into that area of savory snacks and the evolution of crackers from a carrier to a direct snacking occasion. In some respects, the strong growth we've had in Cheez-It has been masked in 2015 by weakness in Special K cracker chips. As many of you know, Special K cracker chips went up very quickly. We lost significant distribution, though, at the end of last year. The velocities have improved with new food, new packaging, new positioning, but we're still working our way through that headwind of the lost distribution. So that there is more underlying growth going on in our snacks business than is apparent at the consolidated level. And if you move from U.S. snacks to international snacks, Pringles has absolutely transformed our business. So it's tripled the size of our international snacks business. It's doubled the size of the company in some emerging markets, particularly in Southeast Asia. And we've been growing the business high single digits since the date of acquisition, and we're still essentially capacity constrained, even though we've added more capacity along the way. So we're still barely scratching the surface of the potential of the Pringles business globally, and Chris will tell you more about that shortly. In addition to breakfast and snacks, we also have the emerging markets. We've seen good growth in emerging markets for several years. We have a goal of significantly accelerating our growth across the emerging markets. In fact, we think we have a plan. We have the potential to double the size of our emerging market business by 2020. We're going to do that through organic growth. We just opened our second plant in India. Through acquisitions, we recently acquired the largest cookie cracker manufacturer in Egypt, which Chris will talk more about shortly, and through joint ventures, such as the joint venture we announced a year or so ago in China with Wilmar. But we are very aggressive in the emerging markets and our growth plans, and we believe now is the right time to make those investments. Whether we're talking breakfast, snacks, or emerging markets, behind all of this is winning where the shopper shops. And this is where a good deal of our Project K reinvestment has been going, back into our U.S. sales force, which is helping improve the trends in our U.S. business. High-frequency stores or small mom-and-pop stores in Asia-Pacific and Latin America, building out our capability there, particularly as we've gone from largely a cereal business sold in large grocery outlets to a snacks company where you want to be within arm's reach of desire. And so the investment in that sales organization and sales capability is having outsized returns for the company. And then finally, the retail environment is going to continue to change dramatically around us. E-commerce requires us to make investments in markets like the UK to be on the leading edge of those practices so that we can take those best practices and evolve our model to fit with the new reality that will be a much greater penetration of e-commerce within our categories. So where do we stand? We have very good earnings visibility. We're seeing improving top-line trends. In some respects, 2015 is stronger than what it appears because we have some unusual headwinds in 2015, particularly in the U.S. So we expect to see better results in 2016 on the top line. But we have outstanding productivity programs coming through in the next 3 or 4 years. We have Project K, our multi-year restructuring program. We've launched zero-based budgeting after a number of internal trials to prove out the concept. And we're seeing great potential in North America, and we'll roll that across international in the years to come as well. And we have good underlying continuous improvement programs that drive our normal 3 to 4% productivity. And Ron will put some numbers around all this to give you a sense of the size of the opportunity and why we have that confidence, not just in 2016, but beyond, in returning to our long-term net sales and operating profit growth guidance. So with that, I'll hand over to Chris to give you a sense of where we stand in Europe and Pringles.
Thanks, John. So I run our European operation, and what I wanted to do over the next few minutes is to spend some time providing you with the reasons we are optimistic that we can return to growth in Europe in the near term. But then also talk about the global Pringles business, which has been, as John said, a fantastic success story for the company. And we are, as he mentioned, really just scratching the surface on the potential of this business. It's approaching $2 billion globally, so it's already a big brand. But we are today selling every single can that we can make around the world and continuing to invest in capacity. So great story on Pringles. On Europe, when you look at 2000 versus 2014, the business has been entirely transformed from a business that was primarily a cereal company in 2000, about $1.5 billion, to a business today that is double the size of that, $2.9 billion on 2014 sales. And you can see the role that Pringles played in that transformation. Not only did it transform the business by providing scale within our snacking category, but it also provided a transformation in our emerging markets where Pringles already had a strong development and the company wasn't very highly developed on the cereal category yet. So in places like Russia and in places like the Gulf, which are big growth opportunities for us for the future, Pringles already had a strong presence, provided great infrastructure to then build our portfolio around. Today, when you look at our emerging market portfolio within Europe, and again, this is primarily the Gulf and Russia, it is 7.5 times larger than it was in 2000. So it's grown from about $60 million to about $450 million in sales. And the operating model that we use to serve, there's a lot of complexity in Europe, almost 1 billion consumers, all speaking different languages, different regulatory environments. We pursue an operating model that's focused on two categories, cereal and snacks, and divides the countries up into 6 cluster operations, which gives us the ability to create significant scale in innovation, supply chain, and brand building, but then also be responsive to local market conditions by having market-focused organizations on the ground. And we serve those markets with these brands as well as other brands in our portfolio. As John mentioned, the growth strategy for Europe really builds on the corporate direction. Winning in breakfast for us is really about returning our developed market cereal business to growth while accelerating growth in our emerging markets. Okay, and I'll come on and talk about each of these in a bit more detail lately, but investing in growing brands, growing segments, and growing geographies is really the core of what we're trying to do in breakfast. Being a global snacking powerhouse, this is about really maximizing the potential of our Pringles business in Europe, as well as returning our wholesome snacks business bars back to mid-single-digit growth. And we've had some success on that recently, which I'll talk about as well. Driving emerging market growth, we're only just scratching the potential of that we see in the emerging markets in Europe in particular, but also around the world, as John said. So when you look at the Gulf, North Africa, the area, the region that we call Arabia, it's a huge opportunity for us, both in terms of cereal category development as well as driving our snacks business. And in Russia, which is a challenging environment to operate in right now, we feel we are in an advantaged position because we have a local brand there, a brand named Lubyatovo, which literally means the goodness of Russian fields and gives us a great position to compete in today's conditions in Russia. And then winning where the shopper shops is really about wherever the shopper is buying food today, whether it's kiosks, whether it's e-commerce, whether it's modern trade, whether it's discount, whether it's the major multiple customers that we see in the UK, we want to be present with our foods so that we can serve those shoppers and those consumers with our food. So really driving depth of distribution, making sure that we have the right proposition from a size and cost standpoint and the right capability to drive that distribution down the trade. Our plan for Europe is to return to low single-digit net sales growth while continuing to expand our strong operating profit margins. And the way that we do that is by growing our emerging markets at high single digits and our snacks in the mid-single digit range, while focusing on returning our developed markets and our cereal business to low single digit. And when you put all of that together, it gets us to a low single digit growth rate somewhere in the 2-4% range on a sustainable basis. We're focused on also expanding our operating profit margins, as I said. We've made great progress on this over the past several years. Between 2012 and year-to-date 2015, we've added over 250 basis points of operating profit margin in Europe. So really, really good progress, driven by productivity in our supply chain, overhead discipline, and then some of the Project K benefits starting to flow down through the P&L. That's enabled us to really invest in accelerating our snacks category, both beyond capacity investment as well as brand building. On cereal, I've talked about some of this. Now, you know, we have, as John mentioned earlier, a real challenge in our Special K business globally that we're starting to see come around a bit in the U.S., which is fabulous. And we are taking the learnings that we have from the U.S. and reapplying them to Europe. It's been a tough situation, but we've got great plans for the balance of this year and into next year to begin to get that business stabilized and ultimately back to growth. But if you take that out of the portfolio and you look at what's happening within our portfolio, we actually have some brands that are growing quite well today. This brand Crave is growing double digit. It's grown double digit for the past 5 or 6 years. It's already a big business for us. Extra up 30-40%, and every market where we launch it is a huge success. This is a granola and muesli brand, so doing very, very well. So we've got some growing brands within our portfolio, some stable brands within our portfolio, and then we're still focused on the wellness aspect of our portfolio and trying to bring that back to growth. We are making a play into the growing segments in the category. When you look at the cereal category, what we're finding is that most of the growth is coming behind granola muesli and hot, so porridges and granolas and mueslis. And we've got a great portfolio of brands to invest behind penetration in these categories, and that's what we're doing. And what you see on the page here is some of the propositions that we're going after. This master brand, Kellogg's One, we launched in Germany last year, and we've already hit a good share position there. Crunchy Nut, which is a brand that we have in the UK, a very, very popular brand in the UK, doing very, very well. And then Special K Porridge and Cocoa Pops Porridge coming. Then growing geographies. As I said, in Russia, we've got a brand called Lubyatovo, which has been successful for us, and I think it puts us in a very good position as we roll forward. And then in the Gulf, we've got a project to really focus on developing the cereal category. Okay, developing the cereal category with Arabian consumers, and we've got a great test going on to prove out that model, which we plan to expand across the Gulf over the next year. By the way, that builds on successful learnings that we've had in emerging markets elsewhere in the world. So some great learnings in the company around really how to develop a palate for cereal in emerging markets. Wholesome snacks, as I said, this story has really been about reinvesting in our foods, improving the quality of the food and the taste of the food, driving strategic alliances like the one that you see with Disney here on Frozen, and then making sure that we have the right pack flexibility, singles and multi-packs, in order to drive distribution up and down the trade and get the products where they need to be in order to meet shopper needs when they're looking for wholesome snacks. And we've seen good success on this business already. If you take out the Cracker Crisps business in the UK and you look at the bar portfolio only, we've already returned this business to growth in the UK this year, and we've got very strong expectations for next year on the business as well. So good success, our plans are working, and we've got big hopes for the future to grow this business. On emerging markets, this is a great story. I mean, we've got 1 billion consumers in Europe that we serve today, in Kellogg Europe, and 1 billion consumers of potential. And we only reach about 400 million of those consumers with our brand propositions today. So massive opportunity amongst roughly 600 million consumers to develop our cereal categories and also drive accessibility with our snacks products. Favorable demographics, these are demos that are growing rapidly. They're young populations. There's great tailwinds there for the future. And we've already got a great track record of growth. In fact, I'll show you on the next slide. Our business in the Arabian area has already tripled over the past 3 years. So we've got a great track record of growth and a very strong economic structure on the business in these geographies. And we spent the last 2 years really reconfiguring our route-to-market capability so that we have best-in-class distributor partners with the best capability that give us the ability to drive distribution and activation up and down the trade. The Arabian region, as I said, tripled since 2011. The little green section on the top of the last bar here is the Biscomas business that we bought this year. So early days, but we're very encouraged by what we see. In the Arabian region, we've got a very large and growing population, 50% of the population under the age of 25, so a very large, growing, young, very fertile place for us to be investing to grow our business. And our categories are growing, okay? So snacks, cereal, and biscuits, which is now the third category that we compete in with the Biscomas company, also growing at high rates within Arabia. And so we're very encouraged by the potential here. And we've been very pleased with this acquisition, which we made at the beginning of this year. It's still very early days. This is Egypt's largest packaged biscuit business. It's about $70 million in sales. It's got very strong go-to-market capabilities, reached about 19,000 outlets in Egypt. And when we look at what they have, we think that there's a great platform for us not only to expand the balance of our portfolio into Egypt, but also to take the portfolio and expand it across the broader North African opportunity. So great opportunity on Biscomas, and we're only just getting started, but we're very encouraged by what we see. So in summary for Europe, our focus has really been on driving strong margin growth and stabilizing our top line. As we roll forward, we continue to expect to drive strong margin growth, but getting the top line back to low single-digit growth behind a fast-growing snacks business, investing in developing our business in emerging markets, and then stabilizing our cereal business, especially in developed markets. Okay, so that's our focus. Turning to Pringles, as John said, I feel very fortunate because I've been very lucky to be associated with this business for almost 10 years, and it's a great brand. This is a brand that is iconic. Okay, it's a brand that, you know, is very differentiated, has an outstanding experience to offer the consumer. It's scaled, so it's got a global supply chain and the ability to execute a very, an almost identical brand proposition around the world. And it's really thrived under Kellogg ownership. Okay, so when we bought this business, it was $1.5 billion in that range. Today, it's approaching $2 billion globally, and we're only just scratching the surface. So lots of potential for this business as we look forward. And Pringles has really transformed our global snacks footprint. So when you look at 2011, our global snacks business was about $4.8 billion, primarily concentrated in North America. And today, our snacks business is about $6.5 billion, and you can see the impact that the Pringles business had on the geographies outside of North America, in particular in Europe, Asia, and L.A. You can see the expansion of those segments of the pie. And the net sales CAGR since acquisition on Pringles has been in the high single digits. So outstanding growth, very, very successful acquisition. So not only has Pringles transformed the Kellogg Company snacking portfolio, but Kellogg's has really transformed Pringles as well. This is a brand, as I said, that's approaching $2 billion in sales around the world, high single-digit growth since acquisition. The company has invested in new capacity, and we brought 15 to 20% of new capacity already online, and we're looking to invest in more in order to fuel the growth, because even with the 15 to 20% that we brought online, we're still selling every single can that we can make. And we've increased the brand investment since acquisition by roughly 30%. So great news. You know, brand investment, more sales on the top line, need more capacity. We've been investing in that, and we've grown to about $2 billion, and we think that the potential for this brand is even much larger than that. In fact, when we look at our share positions in many markets around the world, in our largest markets around the world, you know, we have relatively low share positions in what is an enormous snacking category. And this is why we're encouraged, because we have a brand that is very differentiated, so differentiated that it can effectively compete against much larger players, very differentiated in its business model and its product and its brand, and still has very low share positions around the world. It's expandable consumption, largely impulse, which means that it comes on top of category sales when the shopper buys it. So they'll buy it, and they'll buy it on top of their regular staple snacking items, which is great, a great story for retailer partners as well. And we've invested for growth. When Kellogg's bought the business, we had two manufacturing sites, one in Jackson, Tennessee, which was opened in 1971, the original site, and in Mechelen, Belgium, which was opened in 1997, when we really put a push on expanding in Europe. Since then, since the acquisition, we've opened up Kutno, Poland. We now have several lines operating there. We opened in 2014, Enstek, Malaysia, which we opened in 2015, and in China, in Kunshan, which we opened in 2015 as well. So great progress on fueling the growth with new capacity coming online, and in general, plants that are closer to the sources of demand, so more responsive and lower logistics. We've talked about the left side, comparable net sales, high single digit, almost a $2 billion business. On the right-hand side, I think what is really impressive is not only has this business delivered strong high single digit growth since acquisition, but it's also added 300 basis points of gross margin improvement as well. So really great story on top line and on the structural economics, which has given us the ability to drive higher return on the capital investments we've made, but also to invest in the brand building to fuel stronger top line growth. For the next couple of minutes, I'm going to share with you just a few examples of the success model that we've been executing and what's working and why. Now, this is a case study for driving growth in Europe and really driving growth behind what is a fantastic brand equity. Big commercial activation, what we call commercial activation, which is activation around large consumer-driven events like the speaker and karaoke microphone that you see, which integrates into the can here, which was a giveaway that we executed this summer. Okay, in return for several purchases of cans. It was a redeemable promotion. And we execute hugely behind these with retail partners, and they're very exciting for shoppers and for consumers since they drive big demand. Expanding our size and price point portfolio. So, you know, the business 3 years ago was relatively limited in Europe in terms of its sizes. What we're trying to do is to drive a range that gives us smaller sizes and bigger sizes so that we can access new distribution points, drive different promotions, and really drive the business up and down the trade. And then white space expansion, as I've talked about earlier, primarily into the emerging market elements of our portfolio. But then also launching products like this great tortilla product to access new consumption occasions, which we've launched in the UK and in Germany this year, and it's doing very, very well. So sales in Europe have almost doubled over the last 10 years. And not only have they almost doubled over the last 10 years, but they are accelerating. So our 3-year CAGR of 9% is greater than our 10-year CAGR of 6. And if you look at it on a 5-year CAGR basis, it's about 7. So significantly accelerating and almost doubled to the point where this business is approaching $1 billion in Europe alone. And when we look at some of our core, our biggest core markets like the UK, we're also experiencing very strong growth. So our UK business is up 17% year on year behind both growth in the core, behind some of the things that I talked about earlier, but also the addition of the tortilla proposition on top. So 17% growth in the UK and a category value share of roughly 5%. The cans up on here are just some unique propositions that we design in order to capitalize on unique local tastes. So it just gives you a sense for the capability that we have and the flexibility that we have within our business model. Smoky bacon, the one on the left is a can that we put together in support of the England soccer team for the soccer season. Now, what I wanted to do was to show a piece of advertising, which is essentially a compendium of some of the advertising that we've been using in the marketplace. It's a 30-second spot, so if you go ahead and roll it, that would be great. Do we have it? Okay. I'll just move on. I'm not going to sing it. He wants me to. Anyway. The brand is, we've invested in the notion that not only do people love the great taste of Pringles, but they also do some very unique and interesting things with them. And that's what this advertising is all about, how people use the brand to do unique and interesting things within their lives. And it really places the brand in the context of people's everyday lives in some very humorous situations. So when we look at, that's our core sort of developed market growth model, and it's working very, very well, driving accelerated growth rates. When we look at our emerging markets, there's still significant opportunity for growth on this business around the world. And you can see we've got very low or relatively low share positions around the world, many places, Egypt, where we, basically have a non-existent business in a very large category. Thailand, which I'll talk about in a moment, Turkey, huge opportunity. In the emerging markets category is over $30 billion in size. In our business, when we look at Pringles on a global basis across emerging markets, we're only about 10% of our business in emerging markets today, whereas when you look at the category average, it's closer to 40. So huge opportunity for us to continue to develop our business in emerging markets and to really drive the proposition up and down the trade. Today, in many outlets in Asia and Latin America, we are present in less than 5%. So huge opportunity to drive availability, impulse, and desire, and that's what we're after. Now, when we look at Thailand, which is a great case study, Thailand is not a huge business for us, but it's a great case study in driving emerging market growth. Thailand has grown double digits over the past 3 years on a CAGR basis. We've doubled our share in Thailand. And many of the principles or approaches that we use in our developed markets also apply to emerging markets, you know, making sure that we've got the right price point and channels, driving strong distribution and visibility, and then also building the brand. But what's also critically important here is that we have a proposition, a small size proposition, which you see here, a can that we call the Nano Can, which we can really get down into high frequency and small store outlets, okay, kiosks and places like that. And then also having very high-quality route-to-market capability, and we're very fortunate to have a great partner that we work with in Thailand. And the business has grown double-digit over the past 3 years, and again, we've doubled our share. So great reason to believe that we can actually execute this type of program in other emerging markets around the world, and we're seeing that even broader than Thailand. So in summary, Europe, we've got great plans to grow, both in cereal and snacks. We've had very strong discipline over the past couple of years and strong margin expansion. We've made some great acquisitions, one on Pringles, one on Biscomas. We're very encouraged by the results, especially in driving emerging market growth. And Pringles continues to be a growth engine for the region and for the globe. So with that, I'll turn it over to Ron.
Thanks very much, Chris, and good morning, everyone. Glad to see you. I'm going to cover three things. First, our 2015 guidance. Second, as John mentioned, I'll talk about our productivity improvements and our structural cost improvements as well that we're making within our business. And last, I'll touch on cash flow and uses of cash. So first, our guidance for 2015. This is absolutely in line with what we communicated on the second quarter call. And in addition to that, on a currency-neutral basis, it's in line with the original guidance that we provided for the year. I'd remind you that our operating profit and earnings per share includes a 3 to 4 point headwind associated with reinstating incentive compensation back to target level. So our underlying performance is a bit stronger. And then on cash flow, at $1 billion, and this is cash flow after capital spending, that includes approximately $350 million associated with the execution of Project K. And that is the highest level of cash investment that we will have over the life of the project. So still on track to deliver 2015 financial objectives. Now, in terms of our productivity improvements and structural cost improvements, we have a demonstrated track record of delivering 3 to 4% productivity improvements in our supply chain over the past 10 years or more. On top of that, at the end of 2013, we launched Project K, our 4-year global growth and efficiency initiative to save $425 to $475 million pre-tax over the life of the program and to hit that run rate in 2018. That project is absolutely on track, both from a financial investment standpoint and from a savings standpoint. Because it's on track as well, we feel comfortable now in launching zero-based budgeting. We are starting in North America, and then we will cascade that across the globe as we move through 2016 and into future years. That gives us good visibility to our earnings and is what allowed us to reinforce that we will be back on our long-term targets starting in 2016. So let me remind you of the key components of Project K. First, we're creating the supply chain to serve our business over the next 5 to 10 years. So we're rationalizing some capacity in some of our big developed markets. As Chris said, we're also putting down capacity around the globe where we're seeing faster growth. For example, behind the Pringles business and also behind the cereal business. In India, we just recently opened a manufacturing plant to support the growth in that business. We're also implementing Kellogg Work Systems. So this is a program designed around employee engagement and ownership to drive productivity faster within our manufacturing environment. On the SG&A side, we're implementing global business services to be more effective and efficient in our back office services. In addition to that, we created our global category teams behind breakfast and snacks, and our lead regions around the globe are aligned behind those categories. And then there were some other organizational efficiencies that we undertook and executed in association with the program. Now, this page shows you some specifics on the program in terms of what we've done by region. I won't go through it in detail, but what you can see here is closure of some manufacturing plants in developed markets. You can also see some rationalization or downsizing in developed markets. In addition to that, the organizational efficiencies that I talked about, and then underpinning that across the globe, implementing global business services, creating regional centers to be more effective and efficient on an end-to-end basis across the four functions that you see there. And then also, we opened up some services in low-cost locations in India to save some money. So as I mentioned, Project K is on track both operationally and financially. So as a result, we've implemented or are implementing zero-based budgeting. project is underway within North America. We're doing the diagnostic work at this point in time. We're interrogating around $2 billion worth of discretionary spend. It's important to note that this project will roll out over the next 2 to 3 years in North America and then across the globe as well, so through 2017, 18, 19. And then our intent, obviously, is to sustain that cost base once we find the opportunities. In 2016, at this point, we have visibility to an incremental $100 million worth of savings on this program. Now, this is the money chart. This shows you that as we look at 2016, through our productivity improvements and these two structural cost improvement programs, Project K and zero-based budgeting, we have visibility to $450 to $500 million worth of savings. As you'd expect, the productivity improvements, this is a 3 to 4% that I mentioned earlier that we save in supply chain, we expect that to offset inflation within our business. Project K, our savings are ramping up into 2016, and 2017 we see strong levels of savings as well, north of $100 million. Zero-based budgeting, as I mentioned, another $100 million, that's first year in North America. We'll start to roll that across the globe beginning second half of 2016. We might find some quick wins and some learnings in North America that we will cascade immediately into the other regions of the globe to generate savings for those businesses. So we have good visibility in 16, significant amount of savings, but we also have visibility to 2017 and 2018 on our productivity and structural cost improvement programs. And as you'd expect, these savings will exceed the investments that we'll put back into the business because we have talked about reinvesting some of the Project K savings back into the business. So as a result of that, and as a result of the improving top-line trends that we're seeing in our business, the good growth in our international business as well, we have confidence to say that we'll be back on our long-term targets on a currency-neutral basis for both sales and operating profit in 2016. Now on cash flow and uses of cash. Over the past 4 to 5 years, we've demonstrated $1 billion or more of cash flow. And this is, again, cash flow after capital spending. When we bought Pringles, we said that we would take an opportunity to look very hard at our working capital. And we've done just that. Back in 2012, 2013, our core working capital was a little less than 8% to sales on a rolling 12-month basis. We showed in our second quarter earnings call that we've dropped that by a point. We're a little under 7%. So we've made good headway in reducing our working capital on our balance sheet, and we have plans to improve it even further to drive stronger cash flow. And, of course, we return that cash flow to our share owners through our dividend program and share repurchases as well. Dividend program remains the same. We work within a 40 to 50% payout ratio, and then generally we return the excess cash to share owners through share repurchases, but for when we are making significant acquisitions. For example, when we bought Pringles, we pulled back for a couple of years on share repurchases, paid down some debt, strengthened our liquidity position. So in terms of acquisitions, we remain very financially disciplined, both in the evaluation of those acquisitions and the prices that we will pay for targets. Things that would be interesting to us, first, businesses in the natural or organic space across the globe. Second, snacks businesses, both domestically and internationally, that fit in with our strategic objectives, and certainly businesses that are in emerging markets that might add to our scale in snacks. So in summary, we're on track to achieve our 2015 guidance. We're seeing good growth in sales performance, or expect good growth in sales performance as we progress through the year and get into 2016. Our productivity improvements and our structural cost improvement programs give us confidence in being able to get back on our long-term targets starting in 2016. So with that, I'll turn it over for questions. Thank you.
I think what we're going to do is give it a time as we'll head right over the breakout.
Okay.
Please join me. Thank you.